Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Welcome. Glad you tuned in. Happy Wednesday to you. Well, I am excited for today's show. I think you're going to get some great information that's going to equip you and encourage you and challenge you, and I think we're going to have a couple belly laughs along the way. First hour, we're going to be talking to John Weiss. He's an author and pastor, and I got to be honest, if you are friends with me on Facebook, I recently posted a picture of something like 60 books on my desk that I have to go through, and I love doing that. I love that part of the job, and my assistant producer Grace has as many on her desk. We get lots of books in, and so we're always prayerfully sorting through which topics to cover. I got to be honest, when I saw a book titled Jesus Prom, I wasn't sure what to think about it, but I sat at my desk and belly laughed my way through this book, as well as, even better than that, was just challenged in the most profound ways to love in a more practical way. So John Weiss has written a great book. It's called Jesus Prom: Life Gets Fun When You Love People Like God Does. And he, like my friend Dr. Greg Smalley, who we have on second hour, John is like Greg in that he's an incident waiting to happen. You'll hear some of his stories. I can't wait to get a copy in your hand. So anytime during this first hour you want to copy the book, we've got three to give away. You can chime in with your questions or your comments. Here's the number: 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. So let me tell you about my guest, and we'll get the conversation started. John Weiss is senior pastor and lead follower of Southland Christian Church, a restoration movement church in Lexington, Kentucky, with an average weekend attendance of over 12,000. He's been known to go to the streets of Lexington wearing a sign around his neck for free hugs. Through this kind of ministry, John hopes to reach parts of the population that the church traditionally overlooks. John and his wife, Allison, have two children, Ava and Silas. You can find them on the web at johnweiss.com. John, welcome to the show. Just an honor to talk with you today.
Well, thanks for having me, Susie. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, well, we love to start out our conversations talking scripture, and you chose a wonderful verse, Galatians 5:6. The only thing that counts is faith expressing itself through love. Talk about that passage.
Well, after my dad died, I went through a season where I was trying to figure out how to grieve and how to turn around the emotions I was feeling in a productive, positive way for the kingdom, and was in my office reading through Galatians and stumbled upon that verse and committed it to memory and asked the Spirit to just bring it to the forefront of my mind, especially when I started feeling sorry for myself or feeling down. And it was interesting how he brought to me people that needed to be loved. And I thought, what better way to express my faith, especially in this difficult season, than to love the people right in front of me?
Wow. And
it just became a simple practice for me that eventually made its way into the life of our church.
That is amazing. And I've got more questions about your dad that I'll get to in a little bit. What a man of God he was. Wow. But I would love some backstory. Maybe this will involve your dad. But on your faith journey, you're growing up, and how really you became all in for Jesus.
I grew up with parents who absolutely loved Jesus. And my parents were campus pastors at the University of Missouri for 40 years, and I didn't grow up in a traditional church background. I went to church every Sunday with a few thousand college students, and front lines evangelism, front line on the apologetics front, just in terms of defending the faith in a secular environment. So it was always exciting. There were always people coming to Christ. And my parents had a huge capacity to love anyone. My dad prayed every day, God, put three people in my path today that I don't know who don't know you. And I will be faithful in sharing your love with them in some tangible way. So when I would get off the school bus, I never knew, if it was going to be a hitchhiker or a homeless person eating dinner, sleeping in the spare bedroom next to us. And I just saw faith, again, expressed or lived out in very simple but deep ways. And wasn't uncommon to come home from baseball practice and my parents would say, hey, jump in the car, we're going to go down to the creek and baptize someone.
Wow.
And, just really fun. Or I'd be in the front seat, my dad would pick up a hitchhiker and he'd say, hop in the back. And my brothers and sister and I would be privy to a conversation where he would drive 20 miles an hour and slow down just so he had time to share what Jesus had done in his life, and he might turn it over to us and say, hey, what has Jesus done for you guys? And we would be able to share with someone that we didn't know. So it, you know, that was kind of a formative time for me growing up and experiencing Jesus in very tangible ways.
And how brilliant of your dad, even to put you in a position to have to share what Jesus has done, because there's something in us that activates, not only when we share Christ's love, but when we share Christ's story,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Yeah, his word was exposure. He just thought, he equated discipleship with exposure. You expose your kids or whoever you're with to the words in God's book, but then you also expose them to what it looks like in tangible, simple ways to love people. So if he was making a hospital call, he always had two or three people with him. If he was doing a funeral or a wedding, two or three people were always with him. They could be exposed to what ministry looked like, and patterned it very simply after Jesus. Imagine that.
So, imagine that. Remember reading a story in your book about a time that he was praying for those three people to run into those people God had assigned to him, and one was a man, I think, on a country road, and he stopped, and the man invited him into his house. You remember that story in your book?
Yes.
Will you tell that one?
Yeah, my dad was leaving work, and he kept a list of the people that he had encountered during the day, and there was one missing. And so he prayed on the way home, God, if you want to redirect my footsteps even now, I'm available. And took a backcountry road home, one that he didn't normally take home, and saw a guy in a field motioning to him and literally saying, come this direction. So my dad drove up this long country lane, I could take you there today, and pulled into the front door of this guy's house, and looked out in the field, and the guy was just pointing to the house. And so my dad went up and knocked on the door, and this large, burly farmer came to the door with overalls on and said to my dad, did God send you? And my dad said, I believe so. And he invited him in, and there was a shotgun on the guy's table. And he said, I've been sitting here all day trying to figure out why I should keep living. And my dad said, well, I can give you a lot of reasons, but I'll give you one to start with, and that is that I love you and God loves you. And just was able to share the gospel with him. And that guy came to Christ. My dad eventually baptized him in the pond in his property, became a member of the church there in that small town, and honestly was just a pig farmer, really faithful guy the rest of his life. And we used to cut wood with him, and just a great man, but wouldn't have come to know Jesus if my dad hadn't prayed that simple prayer every day.
You know, I'm thinking of the word your dad used, John, exposure, because the opposite of that you'd think would be protection. And I think that's what has inoculated so much of the body of Christ is a holy bubble protection. You were exposed to unbelievers. You were exposed to unbelievers coming to Christ. You were exposed to a culture that had some of the tension in it of unbelievers and believers walking with each other. I mean, all those things to me create an electricity that's absent when you're protected from that, don't you think?
Sure. My dad used to say, you know, John, evangelism and fishing, Jesus equated them for a reason. They're messy. You know, you never pull a fish out of the water that's clean and smells good. And he said, people's lives are messy. And we got to wade into that mess and bear that burden with them. You know, he used to quote another passage in Galatians, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you fulfill the law of Christ. And, you know, I saw that. I saw my parents weeping with people. You know, we took in refugees after the Vietnam War, and I thought everybody had eight Vietnamese people living in their house. I just thought that was normal.
You know?
I'd come home, and we weren't rich. We were poor. You know, I used to tell people all the time, we ate spaghetti twice a week, and I thought we were cosmopolitan, but it was because we couldn't afford, you know, other food. And my parents just scraped pennies and nickels and dimes together to be able to care for people. And we saw the horrors of war lived out in those families that came over that had been, you know, refugees, displaced from their own countries, and just got to see my parents love them unconditionally the way that we've been loved. And my parents were not perfect, didn't have a perfect marriage, didn't do ministry perfectly, like all of us. But one thing they recognized was, you know, that passage in 1 Corinthians 13 that says, love never fails. And that's so true. It doesn't. And when we attempt to love people with a sincerity of heart, it has far-reaching impact, not just for the individual we're loving, but for everybody who's watching. And non-believers need to see us loving messy people.
Indeed. Wow, John, I can't wait to meet your dad someday.
Yeah, I can't wait for you to meet him.
Wow.
Miss him.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I lost my dad couple years ago and went through just a deep valley of grief as well. And when I think of the legacy that this pops of yours has left and just how you're walking it out, you've made him proud, I'm sure. And
well, thank you.
Yeah, especially when you're wearing a sign around your neck saying free hugs. I just think that's great.
That's been a fun journey.
So one of the stories that made me laugh out loud was when a woman pulled up and said, "Are you for real?" And you said, "Come a little closer and find out."
You'll find out. Yeah.
So tell me what some of the response has been to people when you've offered free hugs.
Yeah, you know, at my dad's funeral, I watched people just offer affection. All the boundaries that we normally have go away in times of, you know, loss, and had an impact on me. And so my daughter and I made this sign. It was about 10 years ago, and I just on Tuesday started standing on a street corner, and one of the very first people who came across the street squinted, and then as he got closer, he said, "Oh, I thought it said free hogs." And, you know, only in Kentucky would people think we're giving away free farm animals on the street corner.
Oh, man.
I've had people say, "Does it say free drugs?" I'm like, "No, we need to work on phonetics and spelling in Kentucky." You know, I've had people take the sign out of my hand and threaten to tear it up. People get angry. People, you know, yell at me, yell all kinds of mean stuff. And, you know, the guy that threatened to tear my sign up a couple of years ago, I just smiled at him. I thought, what can I do, you know? And I said, if you tear my sign up, you just prove that I need to be down here more.
Wow.
And he kind of looked at me, and I think it, you know, sunk in that our world is hard. It has hard edges. And I'm down there for one reason, and that is to build relationships with people that I wouldn't normally get to meet. And I have never told anyone I'm a pastor when I'm down there. And it's really interesting how they just immediately open up. I hug them, and then they just start talking. And they tell me their stories. And all of us have a similar thread in all of our stories. It's pain. You know, that's the common language of humanity. And I just listen, because I think listening is one of the most neglected forms of love, but it's also one of the greatest forms of love. And people are so busy anymore, they don't stop to pay attention to people. And that lady that came up, you know, and said, "Are you for real?" She couldn't read. She had no idea what my sign said. And I had to tell her. And that's when I said, I'm going to hug you, you know. And she just kind of looked at me, so I went in for the kill, and she held on for dear life and wouldn't let go, so I didn't let go of her. And then she said, "Nobody's hugged me in a long time."
Wow.
And when nobody hugs you, you feel like a nobody.
Yeah.
And as I say in the book, nobody's a nobody to God. Everybody's a somebody to God. They all matter. Every single one of them.
Every single one.
Yeah, and I've been able to go to hospitals and funerals and graduations. I get invited to all kinds of stuff. And then the conversation turns to, what do you do for a living? And, you know, I'm able to say, well, I work in a church, but daily I follow Jesus. That's really my job, you know, and I love people because Jesus has loved me. And, you know, I've been able to lead people to Christ as a result of it. There'll be people in heaven because of free hugs, which sounds ridiculous on so many levels, but I'm an introvert. I'm not even really an extroverted guy, but it just was something that I thought would be a simple way to express, again, that love that we talked about.
Wow, John, simple but brave, because I'm more wired introvert as well, and that gives me almost a panic attack to think of it. But I think it's so beautiful, really. And, in fact, you talk about one of your just very natural, supernatural ways, I think, that you evangelize is just to ask people how you can help them. I want you just to unpack that a little bit. And, say more about just your approach that way.
Okay. I started riding the city buses after the free hugs thing. I became friends with a group of homeless men who were hanging out in the park near where I was doing this. And the courthouse is across the street. And the judge in the courthouse would literally send people across the street to hug me as part of their sentencing. And, you know, it was awesome because most of the side hugs I knew they were coming from the, you know, the courthouse. And I was like, okay, there's the common thread here. And these homeless guys were riding the city buses. So I started jumping on the bus with them. And I found an entirely different demographic of people that I'd never encountered before who were struggling with mental illness. And a lot of them were veterans of war. And I just have a huge heart for them and met a guy named Vince who invited me into his apartment and showed me his medals. You know, he was a decorated hero, but was borderline homeless. You know, I mean, he was living in the smallest apartment possible. And I just, as I was reading through the story of Jesus healing Bartimaeus, he asked Bartimaeus a question. What can I do for you? And that seems so simple, but I think the assumption is that we know what people need. I didn't know what Vince really needed, you know? And so I just decided to start asking people, what do you need? And it's so disarming for people because they know what they need, and they'll tell you, and then you can just meet that need instead of assuming that, you know, well, Vince needs a nicer apartment or Vince needs more money. What Vince wanted was just friendship. He just said, would you stop by every so often and, you know, spend some time with me? And so for that season of my life, I put that on my schedule and pray for Vince. You know, just simple things that I can do. And I met a lady one time on the side of a road who I assumed needed a ride. And really what she needed was someone to help her fill her prescriptions. And so I just asked her, what can I do for you today? And she said, can you help me? You know, I can't understand these insurance papers. And I didn't understand them either, to be honest with you. I'm not that smart. So I took them to someone who could decipher them for us, and we were able to help her. And now we have teams of people that just go knocking on the worst neighborhoods in our city. We ask the police every year, what's the most violent neighborhood? Where do you not want to patrol? And then that's where we go.
Wow.
And we ask. We just knock on the door in teams, and we say, what can we do? And people say, you know what? My car needs a carburetor. Or, you know what? We don't have mattresses. Can you get us mattresses? And we just try to, again, scrape pennies, nickels, and dimes together, and we just figure it out. And that allows us, gives us permission then to build relationship and the attempt of exposing them to Jesus.
Can't even tell you how much I love this. I'm talking to John Weiss today. Title of his book is Jesus Prom, and there's a disco ball in the front. And don't let the title or the picture fool you, because there's some huge, great, great depth in this book, and as well as some belly laugh moments. My goodness. I love this book. We've got three copies to give away, 877-933-2484. You have to get on the air, though. I'd love for you to just comment, chime into the conversation, or ask John a question, 877-933-2484, or email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. Okay, you got to tell me about this title.
Okay. Jesus Prom is based on Luke 14. Jesus is teaching on humility and taking the back seat. He says, don't take a seat of honor when you're at a party. And then he says, when you throw a party, don't invite your friends, your rich neighbors, or your relatives, because they will repay you. Instead, invite the lame, the crippled, the blind, and the poor, and you will be repaid on the day of the resurrection. And so we decided that we were going to start throwing the best parties, heaven-type parties, for people that were being marginalized in our city. And we started with physically and mentally challenged adults. And we decided to call it Prom, Jesus Prom, because most of them went to school with us, but they were never invited to the parties that we were invited to. And we, every year, throw a party. It's coming up in November, where we roll out red carpet, literally. We invite all the limousines in Central Kentucky to donate their services. We pick up 2,000 mentally and physically challenged adults. We spend 6 months getting them fitted for tuxes and formal dresses, and we cater the best meal we can possibly cater. We put disco balls up in our church, and we put a live band on stage, and we dance the night away. Our high school students and college students are their escorts. We have photography booths and makeup counters and games and prizes. And we just celebrate people that we feel like have a special place deep in the heart of God.
Mm.
And I'm telling you, after doing it for now, it's our 12th year,
wow,
that if Jesus were anywhere on the planet,
He would be at that prom.
In that room, dancing, cutting a rug with those people, because
yeah,
there's so much joy in their hearts. And we learn so much about love and innocence and beauty from them. And we say they're challenged, but I'm convinced that they have a little bit of the kingdom in them that we don't.
Indeed. I have to come sometime, because I want to see how this is done so we can do this in our city. I absolutely love the idea. Just from a logistical standpoint, that would be quite an investment. I mean, people always say, if it's God's will, it's God's bill. But I mean, logistically, how do you walk that out? I mean, do you get sponsors? How do you do that?
Yeah. We just invite people in the city. You know, the first year we did it, we footed the bill for it. But then as word got out about it, people have a heart for stuff like this.
Mm.
And there are so many families in our city who are dying. They're just tired, because daily care for adults with these challenges is exhausting. And so we just pitch it that way. Hey, we're providing a span of care for people in our city, and we need to come together. And so the tuxedo stores and the formal dress shops, and I mean, it doesn't take anything. We hardly spend a dime on it now, because really, from a decoration standpoint, they're not drawn to the same level of decoration that we would require. And so we just go to flea markets and garage sales. And, you know, this year the prize is cologne and perfume. So every person that comes gets a door prize of a new bottle of cologne and perfume. And we get all of that donated. Get all the food donated. I mean, it's amazing how much people in the city, when they come together, what it does is it builds a bridge between the Christian and the secular world. And the secular world begins to see us in a different light because they're like, wow, these people not only throw a party once a year for these folks, we provide a span of care every week for those families. And they begin to rally around that.
That is amazing. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. Got three copies. I have an advanced copy, but I'm not parting with it. Sorry. So you got to get on the air with a question or comment. Kyla is calling in from Evansville, Wisconsin. Kyla, welcome. You're on the air. Or Kaya. Is that the name? Is that
Kaya.
Your name? I'm so
Kaya.
Sorry. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I just have a question. You have inspired me, and I am just wondering what advice you have for parents to show Jesus like your father showed you Jesus, and now you're living that out. What wisdom do you have to pass on to parents who are raising young children right now?
Absolutely. It's a great question. I think one of the best things you can do with your kids is have a regular pattern of serving where you're serving right beside them, and they get to see you serve because they're going to, you know, there's the old saying, we teach what we know, but we reproduce what we are. If you're a servant leader, they're going to follow your example. And I think faith sticks for kids beyond just knowledge of the Bible. They have to see it being modeled for them. So like with my kids, we have a backpack program at our church where it is so simple. They're just putting food in a backpack for kids who are at risk in our community and wouldn't have a meal if our church wasn't providing those simple groceries. And so my kids, every Tuesday night with my wife and I, they're standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder with us. And that just begins to get that DNA in them that church is not something you go to. It's something that you are. Wherever we are, we're the church. Mm-hmm. And so if you can find little simple places where you can plug in and serve alongside of your kids, I think that's as important as having a nightly Bible study time and prayer time.
Wow. Thank you for that call, Kaya. Appreciate it so much. And you are so going to enjoy John's book. And there's lots of other ideas in the book for you to draw from as well. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We've got Dean calling in from Winnipeg, Canada. Dean, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey there.
How are you today?
Really great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate the conversation. I had a recent experience here. In Canada, we have our Thanksgiving about a month or ahead of you folks. And I was just coming home from work, had a coworker that I was bringing over for Thanksgiving dinner. And we had some other friends and family. It's going to be kind of a big dinner. And stopping by to pick something up on the way home, there was a young lady. You could tell she was pretty down and out. She was shaking. And she had asked for a ride. And giving her ride to this other store down the way, you could tell she really wanted to be with people for Thanksgiving. And you know, I felt so strongly in my heart, I want to bring this young lady to our house. I want to have her be around a family, just love on her. But I knew my family and a lot of my family that were aren't really comfortable with that sort of thing. And even when I brought it up later, they had all these reasons why it was a bad idea.
Huh.
I feel so strongly to be reaching out and finding opportunities to love people in this way, but I recognize it causes a lot of almost unhealthy friction. How would I walk this out in a way that's winsome and brings in the hearts of my family members into this type of ministry rather than repulse them?
Sure.
John, I want to tell you, you got about 45 seconds before we have to head out to a break. So you can start with Dean, and we'll pick it up, Dean, on the other side of the break. But go ahead, John.
Dean, I would just say, you know, start with something small. Obviously, that's a big step, and your family was uncomfortable with it. I would set aside another day. And there's probably, you know, if it's not the Thanksgiving day, you set aside another day at your place and you say, hey, I'm going to invite you over to my house. Would you be willing to come? And I bet you there's one or two family members that you have who would help you. And then it's a small step. You know, you want to give them bite-sized chunks so that they don't choke on it, they can swallow it, and begin to see that transformation. and I'll give you some more practical stuff after the break.
Dean, thanks for that call, and you get a copy of Jesus Prom. I'm telling you what, you're going to love it. Dave, I see you. You're up next. 877-933-2484. Talking to John Weiss, having a great conversation. You know what he says? Life gets fun when you love people like God does. More with John Weiss in just a moment. Tuning in today, I'm Suzy Larson. This is Live the Promise, having a fabulous conversation with author and pastor John Weiss. Title of his book is Jesus Prom, Life Gets Fun When You Love People Like God Does. And if you just tuned in, I'm telling you, this is one of those days you're going to want to go back and catch the first half of the program. Dave's calling in from New York Mills, I believe, and he's got a question about the Jesus Prom. Dave, welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, you guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering about how long did it take people to realize it, and how to get people involved
with the Jesus Prom?
Yes.
It has grown over the years. When we started, it was small. We started with just a thing we called the Jesus Party, and it was a thing we did on Saturday nights, and started small with 30 people just in our church family. And, we would get balloons and cake and have fun, games for them, and have a little Bible lesson. And then as word got out in the community of mentally and or physically challenged adults, then families started bringing their loved ones in. And they kind of treated it like a babysitting service at first. They would just drop their loved one off, and they would go run errands. And we were okay with that. We thought, you know what, if it gives them a break and gives them an hour or two just to do what they need to do, then great. But as that community of people grew, we started hearing more and more that we needed to do something big. And so that's when we decided to get our whole church involved and say, hey, here's the idea, who would be willing to serve. And the volunteer culture that is now a part of it has just grown as the prom has grown. And we've started them in other communities in Central Kentucky. Now there's one in Colorado, a couple in California. They're starting to pop up other places too. And we've trained other church leaders. We always invite people to come see it for themselves, bring some folks with them from their church, and you can start them anywhere and of any size. And so it's November the 7th, and I would just throw out this blanket invitation. We'd love to have anybody who's listening come to Lexington November the 7th and hang out with us. We'll have a hospitality room, and you can plug in there and participate and even ask questions as to logistically how we pull it off.
Wow, that is amazing. And we're talking about even something bigger than the Jesus Prom here, because the whole book is about making ourselves available in everyday ways to say, how can I help you? What do you need today? And John talked about his dad who's gone on to be with the Lord, who just had this commitment with God. Lord, put three people in my path who don't know you, that I don't know, that I can share the love of God. And God did that faithfully. And the stories, boy, that John's dad had to share and how that impacted John's ministry is just breathtaking. 877-933-2484. Barry's calling in from Detroit Lakes with a comment. Barry, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, Susie and John. Hey. I just want to thank you for the subject that you're addressing, and I'm just praying that it would catch like wildfire.
Amen.
Thank you, Barry. Appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, thank you, Barry. You got a tender heart, I can tell. I'm so glad you called. And Brent is also a listener. He emailed, said, Susie, I've totally enjoyed this show today. This is such a major wake-up call. We are called to love God and love others, but so often we only love those like us and those we already know. This has been such an encouragement today as well as a challenge. Your guest totally reminds me of the author of Mercy Beyond Measure. You are truly living out the gospel. Thank you for the encouragement, Brent. God bless you there.
Thank you.
Yeah, and here's a quote from John's book. You write, I don't mean this as an indictment, but it seems as though some of us have lost our verbs. When we lose our verbs, we become what the world claims we are, hypocrites. A hypocrite is nothing more than a noun without a verb. Lovers who don't love, givers who don't give, followers who don't follow. And John, I was just thinking the other day of writing a post about mean Christians, because that's an oxymoron. And yet that's the very thing that takes the wind out of the sails of church leaders. It's the very thing that turns the unsaved world off from us, is when we get so caught up in our stuff, we become downright mean spirited. There is no place, because Jesus even said, love your enemies. So there's not a place for mean spiritedness. And so I love what you're saying here. So talk more about the call for us as Christ followers to be acting out in our verbs, not to lose our verbs.
Yeah, I do think, grammatically speaking, if you read through the Gospels, it is very simple. There's a singular noun, which is Christian, and there's a plural noun, which is church. Church is just a bunch of Christians. Christian is the one individual, but the responsibility is the same, and that is to love our neighbor as we love ourselves, to demonstrate the way that we've been loved in very tangible ways for the world that's watching, and that does include our enemies. And think about, if all we did was think through creative ways and simple ways to express that love to our neighbors, how different the perspective would be towards Christians and towards the church. And I see it in our community. We do not enter into a lot of the arguments that a lot of churches get into. We make unity a real high priority for us and love a real high priority for us, and we're willing to work with any Christian who's willing to fight for people who don't know Jesus yet. We fight too much over stuff that doesn't matter.
Indeed.
And it does not have an eternal perspective. And I don't want to stand before God someday and say, hey, I spent half my ministry arguing over all the things that I'm not even sure I'm clear on in Scripture. But the one thing I am clear on, Jesus died for people. And he put his life on the line for people. And that's what I want to do. And I want to be able to stand before the Father and say, I literally allowed the Spirit to wring me out of all the love that's been poured into my life for the good of other people.
In fact, you wrote that you can't think of a problem that can't be solved by love. I want you to say more about that.
Having lived in Haiti and, saw poverty at a level that I never dreamed I would experience, and that 4 years down there was, again, formative for me, I didn't see any obstacle that couldn't be overcome with love. I think we have the mindset that ministry requires money. And it is part of the fuel that we burn to do things, but we can do ministry without money. Jesus didn't have money, and he did some creative stuff to love people. And his power is available to us. And when I was in Haiti, I got to see that. I never had enough financial resource to meet all the needs of the people around me. But that didn't keep me from being a presence in their lives and letting them know that I care. And simple things like listening, touching, showing up, offering encouragement, those are things that don't require money that meet any problem that anyone has. And I'm just more and more convinced that I think God is inviting us because of the challenges our world faces right now, specifically with the breakdown of the family, that love is the response that we have to give to everything that's happening.
Indeed. You tell a story in the book about your time in Haiti. I think there was if I remember right, he was physically, mentally challenged, or an elderly man, forgive me, I don't remember, but he was sitting in sewage, sorting through sewage. He was blind, if I remember that.
Yes.
And
yes.
If you don't mind, tell that story.
Came out of the open-air market where I bought my groceries one afternoon, and the way I describe it is it felt like someone had ripped a picture out of a National Geographic magazine and was just holding it up in my face for me to stare at. It was a man who had been crippled at birth by his family. They broke his legs and then didn't reset them with the intent that he would beg and provide for his family. And he was seated across the busy street from me, and he'd been begging, and he had a board that he used to block up the flow of the open sewage that runs in the streets there, and he had his hands down in it. And he was sifting and searching and pulling out old Haitian pennies and used batteries, and he was cleaning them off and tucking them under his leg and putting them in his bag as if they were, little treasures to be protected from a museum. And I just wept. I literally physically couldn't control anymore. I think I was so tired of all the poverty and all the implications of it. And I had two bags of fruit, and I thought, I have something to offer this man. So I went across the street and took hold of his face and in Creole, explained who I was and what I wanted to do for him, and gave him all the food in my bags and all the money in my pockets. And God used him in a very significant way in my life during my time in Haiti to teach me about compassion and to teach me about trusting God to literally be my daily bread. Because I had, a plane ticket to come home. I had a passport that would get me out of Haiti. That guy couldn't, he didn't have anywhere to go. And he didn't have anyone to rely on like I did. And I was put in his life not only to keep him alive, but to make sure that someday he would end up in heaven. And I thought I had so much to offer him, but he taught me so much about love and about seeing God. And even though he was blind, he could see things that I couldn't see.
You wrote, God wants us to see people the way he sees people. God's eyes are always on people. God doesn't spend hours a day in front of a mirror. God holds a mirror and helps people see what he sees, which is potential. God helps them see what is in front of them, not what's behind them. And you think about, wow, imagine if we all started to do that just in our everyday journey. We see people that we would otherwise miss. God, open our eyes and then, you know, give me eyes to see them and help me reflect your heart and your love for them. I mean, you're so right. It would solve a thousand ills in our society. And I would love for you to talk about your dad in his last hours, because you wrote about that, about just when he started to see things and you were asking him what he saw, and even with your mom standing at the sink. But talk about, if you wouldn't mind, about those last hours and what you learned from him in that time.
Sure. Cancer attacked my dad's tongue, and which was ironic in that he spent his whole life telling people about Jesus, and that would be where cancer would have to attack. And it just broke all of our hearts to think that he was robbed of speech in later days. But for the most part, he was able to talk right up until the time of his death. And the cancer spread to his brain, and so he was coming in and out of consciousness a lot. And I was feeding him ice chips one afternoon, just helping relieve some of the pressure from the radiation treatment. And he kept looking around me as I was seated in front of him, and he would smile. And I said, Dad, what are you smiling at? And he said, you don't see them, do you? And he said, them, plural. And we were in the house alone. It was just the two of us. And I said, no, I don't. And he started crying. And he said, you're not going to believe me. And I said, no, I believe you. And he said, there's children everywhere in the room. And I just, you know, like I'm doing right now, I just got choked up. And I said, really, what do they look like? And he said, oh, they're the most beautiful things you've ever seen. He said, they're so full of joy. Mm. And my dad used to describe children as being gifted gifts from God. And I think he saw angels around. And he said, we miss this. We don't always see this, and I'm getting to see it. And I said, Dad, I wish I could see it. I just don't see it. I don't have eyes for it yet. And kind of went to sleep, and afternoon passed, and my siblings showed up for dinner, and we're all eating. And he wakes up in the recliner, and he's looking at my mom with just this intentional look. And everybody said, Dad, are you okay? And he just didn't respond to us. And he said to my mom, he said, do you feel that? And my mom stopped washing the dishes, and she turned around and dried her hands off and said, feel what? And he said, the two hands in the middle of your back. Mm. And my mom said, no, I don't. And this is after a 7-year battle with cancer. Mm. And he said, he knows you're tired. Wow. And he wants you to know he's strong enough to hold you up. He's got you. Mm. And I have no idea, even to this day, what my dad was seeing. But I do know this. When you walk with God, he shows you things that the rest of the world doesn't always get to see. And my dad was privy to some things because of his faithfulness and because of the promise that Jesus made, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And I'm convinced that when we walk with God here on earth, we'll see things even here before the life to come. That's just a small glimpse, a small taste of what's coming. And I believe the miracles of Jesus were just that, pulling back the veil. Oh, you can't walk. I can make that go away. Mm-hmm. Oh, you can't see. I can give you sight. And just helping us see there is a greater reality at play. And it's so easy in the day-to-day to get caught up in this world. But this isn't all there is.
Thank you. I know that cost you something to share, John, but that's just such an amazing, amazing story. My dad saw something up in the corner of the room as well and smiled right before he died. And I love what you said. When you walk with God, he shows you some things the rest of the world doesn't get to see. And that is just true. And I think even as believers, John, we miss that when we miss his heart for the world. If we run to and fro and just sort of do the same thing everybody else does, it's almost like we live like atheists, even though we've got a saving faith. We miss something. And I thought it was so interesting how you wrote that New York City has the greatest number of nearsighted people, and they determined it was because they're surrounded by tall buildings, so they're not, you know, they're not even accustomed to looking long. And I just want you to just speak to the idea of thinking long, looking long, getting vision, getting God's heart, but also getting his eyes, not only for people, which is of utmost importance, but just this life and the next.
Yeah, I do think there's a physical component to this where our eyes are just drawn to the thing right in front of us, and that's Satan uses that, whether that's a screen, whether that's a flashy light, whatever it is, you know, we're just immediately drawn to all the, you know, glitz and glamour of our world. And so physically, I think it's important for us to look at trees and look at birds and look at mountains and look at stars. And, you know, the psalmist told us to do that, to lift our eyes. Where does my help come from? You know, the maker of heaven and earth. I think we have to raise our eyes. But I also think there's a spiritual part of that where one of the things that helps me have a long-term vision is just recognizing the person right in front of me, because nothing else in all of creation bears the image of God like people do. And so if that's the person sacking groceries at the grocery store, I don't need to look past them. I need to look at them and acknowledge them. If it's a waiter, I need to see them, not the important person sitting at the booth next to me. You know, if I'm at a ball game and it's my wife sitting next to me, I want to pay attention to her, my son playing on the field. I don't want to miss eternity that is right in front of me, because the only eternal part of what we have right now are people. And so what helps me see far is just looking at the person right in front of me. And that helps shape not only what I look at, but what I see. And I love seeing God in people, and I love bringing that God image out of people. And the way I do it is just through encouragement. I love telling people, oh, you're so good at that, or wow, that looks really good on you. And so few people are being complimented today.
Yeah,
that it really stands out.
So, so true. In fact, you're in your chapter titled Die, John, you tell the story of an elderly couple that you and your wife encountered in a restaurant. And here again, I'm crying as I'm reading this. But talk about what you learned by watching that couple.
Yeah, we were out to lunch one afternoon, and this couple walks in. The husband is pushing his wife in a wheelchair, and he puts the brakes on, and it's just like in slow motion. You know, he leans over her, and she's had some kind of debilitating stroke or physical malady that's taken away her ability to walk. And with feeble arms, he scoops her up and carries her over to the booth. And the minute he does that, he has everyone's attention in the entire section of this restaurant, including us. And we watch him gently set her down in the booth and pick up her legs and scoot them under the table and situates her fork and her knife and her plate and her drink. And then he sits across from her and he takes her hands and he speaks very kindly to her. And he's got an expression on his face of joy. It's like he knows who she is. And even though she's lost part of who she is, he still sees that beauty in her. He cuts her food and feeds it to her, and we're just watching this whole thing, and I'm just bawling, my wife's bawling, and then he starts to talk to her, and tears just stream down her cheeks, and my wife, Allison, said, what do you think he's saying to her? And I just, first thing that came to my mind is, I said, he's saying, for rich or for poor, in sickness and in health, till death do we part. And vows, commitment, you know, the tough stuff, it's not easy. And all of us are going to say goodbye to a spouse at some point that are married. And I want to treasure my wife the way he treasured his.
Indeed. You wrote, relationships rise and fall based on each person's willingness or unwillingness to die to self. And as you said, that's not easy, and it can be messy. And so, sometimes we look at love as this flowery, message on a greeting card. But love is bloody. Love is messy. Love is dirty. Love is in the sewage dump in Haiti.
Yes.
I mean, and that's where Jesus is. And so I want you just to say a word about the idea that relationships rise and fall based on a person's willingness or unwillingness to die to self.
My job description every day in every relationship is to wash dirty feet. That's the example Jesus set for me. And that's the only thing that I need to focus on in the day-to-day. Otherwise, I become so self-oriented just by human nature and by flesh and by Satan's prompting that I lose sight of why I'm here. And Jesus, there's nothing easy about what Jesus went through. He crawled up on that cross, exposed his hands and his feet, and said, I'm taking this. I laid my life down. They didn't take it from me. Laying my life down for the people around me is a choice, and it's a daily choice. And I don't do it perfectly. You can ask the people I work with, the people I live with. They'll tell you that. But every morning when I wake up, I have a simple practice before my feet hit the ground that just says, I'm going to wash dirty feet today. And so, again, that comes back to where we started, which is, what can I do for you? I think we have to pause and we have to ask people what they need help with. And if my wife says, I need you to stop and get a gallon of milk, or I need whatever it is, that to me is living like Jesus lived. It's an others first mindset. It's a Philippians 2 mindset. I consider others better than myself. And I think that is what ultimately is not only lost in our culture, it's even lost in the church. And we have a consumeristic mindset that has invaded the church. And people actually show up at Southland and they say, hey, we're church shopping. They actually use that terminology. And I say, you're going to hate this place. We have nothing to offer you. You know, I'm just like, there's 300 other churches you can go to. Please don't bring that into this place. And, you know, we have to run people off all the time. And I hate being like that. But there are other people that stick around and we get to help kind of change their mindset. But that mindset of what do you have to give me?
Mm-hmm.
And man, Jesus didn't do that.
Yeah.
He just continued to empty himself. And what's funny is the more you empty yourself, the more God fills you.
Indeed. I remember I served on a leadership team at our church for quite a number of years, and I was greeting people when somebody came in and he said exactly that. And he said, and the last four churches have disappointed me. And he said, and I'll be here until you disappoint me. And I said, that won't take long at all. I just want to promise you. And I said, but really, that's the wrong question. I just challenge you to ask the Lord, is this a place you're called to serve and be a part of the life fabric? And if so, welcome, you know, and he never came back. But anyway, so John, in the book, you tell a story about a flight to Colorado, a toddler named Sebastian, a youth retreat, and a prayer warrior. That was a fantastic story. And would you mind sharing that one?
Sure. I was headed to Colorado to speak at a youth conference, and I didn't have time to work on my sermon on the week of, so I was hoping that I could take my laptop and work on the sermon on the plane. And so I board the flight, get to my aisle, and there's a mom seated in the aisle seat and a dad seated against the window, and then there's an empty seat between them, and the mom's holding this really cute, blonde-haired, fat baby that I just love kids. And so I said, oh, you guys want to sit together? And she kind of shook her head, and he shook his head. So I thought, oh, they've had a fight early in the morning, so I got to plop down between them, and we take off. And the minute we take off, this little kid starts screaming at the top of his lungs, and his ears are popping. I mean, I got little kids, and so I just quietly lean over to the mom and I said, hey, if my kids go through this, you know, pain in flights, I just give them a little sucker or a hard piece of candy and it makes it go away. I said, do you have a sucker? She looked at me and she said, we don't feed Sebastian anything unless it's organic. And so first of all, his name's Sebastian. If your name's Sebastian, we love you, but we feel sorry for you.
Exactly.
And so I said, just jokingly, I thought, well, I'll break the ice. I said, do you have any potato-flavored suckers or broccoli-flavored suckers? I'm just joking. She didn't think it was funny at all. So as my wife reminds me, I'm the only person who thinks I'm funny. So she says to me, do you want to hold him? Well, like I'm not his dad, and I'm kind of wigged out by that. So I turn to his dad, and he says, go for it, dude, in this real surfer tone. And so I'm like, all right. So she just hands me Sebastian. And this kid is healthy. I mean, he is just fun. And the minute he hits my lap, he stops crying. And we're just having a good old time. And she pulls out these little organic crackers and starts feeding them to him. And they smell like a mixture of, like, cat food and multivitamins. Just terrible smelling. And so I'm trying not to let that show. And I'm also thinking about, I need to write my sermon. And he takes out a mouthful of this and just wipes it all over my shirt, all over my face. And then he grabs my hair, and Susie, I don't know how to describe this, other than he pulls on my hair like he's weeding a garden, and I think I'm losing precious hair by the second. I cannot get his little death grip off, and he's not my kid, so I'm trying to be gentle, and they're not stopping any of it. So I finally get his little vice grips off my head, and his dad says to me, he's a real piston, isn't he? And I'm like, yeah, he's a real something. I don't know if piston is the word I would use right now, but yeah. So we land. I don't have a sermon written. I get in this car. I'm already an hour late. I drive up into the mountains, pull in this drive in this parking lot at this camp, and there's not a place to park. And so I'm flying around like a NASCAR driver trying to find a spot. I pull up on the sidewalk. I get out, and there's a fire hydrant in front of the car, and there's a sign that says anyone who parks here will be towed. All cars will be towed at owner's expense. And I'm thinking, this is a rental car. I don't own this, right? So I just throw the keys in it and take off. And I run up the hill to this camp, and there's 2,000 kids sitting on this hillside in this beautiful surroundings. I mean, just Rocky Mountain stuff, you know. And I have nothing. And
you smell like cat food.
I smell like cat food, and I'm loose. I'm just missing huge clumps of hair. And so I pray, God, just whatever you want me to say about Jesus, I'll say it. And I get to the center of that stage, and I tell the story of my wife's salvation, her redemptive story, and it's an incredible story. And I tie it in with Jesus and Nicodemus, and I just said, if anyone wants to be born of water and the Spirit, it can happen today. And we end up in this cold mountain stream, baptizing kids late into the night, taking confessions, and just dealing with sin. And I get back in the car, and I drive back to the airport, and I get a red-eye home. And I pull in the parking lot early in the morning of our church, and I run in to get some books, and Mary Helen is there, and she prays for me. And she stops me, and she said, you know, John, the weirdest thing happened last night. And she says it all the time. And I said, really, what happened? She goes, you're going to think I'm nuts. And I said, I won't. And she said, the Spirit woke me up around 11. And that was about the time, Mountain Central time, that I was getting up to speak. And so I just kind of tuned in, and she said, he just really was telling me to pray for you. So she said, I got down on my knees and I prayed. And she said, the weirdest thing, the only thing that kept coming to my mind was this picture of a fire hydrant. And so I started laughing and giggling, and I didn't want to tell her that the only thing, you know, that had to do with where I parked my car illegally.
Yeah.
But she said, so all I prayed was that God would flood whatever you were doing with the cleansing power of his Spirit. And I just went from laughing to crying. And I hugged Mary Helen. She's this 70-year-old woman, prayer warrior. And I said, he answered your prayers.
Wow.
Not me, it's him.
Such a great conversation. And John, I've got about 4 pages left of notes. You got to come back. If you have time, I would love to just unpack more of this content. Final quote here, it says, the reason God wants you to be his son or daughter is that he wants you to be free. Free from pressure, free from worry, free from comparison, free from sin, free to be you. This is a fantastic book. It's called Jesus Prom. As we wrap up, John, would you pray for that person whose just heart is just breaking beautifully today, just realizing that they themselves are the object of God's affection? Would you just pray that they would awaken to that?
Father, we thank you that every person has been created in your image and that Jesus died to save them. Help them to be free from any of the lies that Satan wants them to believe about their past, about the way they look, or about what culture tells them they need to be, and help them to just rest today in the simple promise that you love them enough that you put your son on a cross for them, and you're coming back to get them. And God, I pray that love would flow out of them to everyone they meet tonight. God, I pray for new patterns and new ways of living and thinking. And we pray this, God, trusting that you hear us and you're going to respond on behalf of all of us who are speaking and listening today in Christ's name. Amen.
Wow. Pastor John, thank you for your time. Thanks for all that you're doing for the kingdom. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Susie, for having me. What a pleasure.
Good conversation. Well, you've been listening to Hour 1 of Live the Promise, and you can find a podcast of today's show on our website in just a few minutes at myfaithradio.com. Up Hour 2, Dr. Greg Smalley joins me again. We're going to talk about traits for healthy marriages. Don't go away. Hour 2 is up next.